Better Living, a program sponsored by the Camden Seventh-day Adventist Church. Better Living is heard each Wednesday and at this time, and will provide listeners with life-changing, Christ-centered, natural health information that will enable you to effectively prevent disease and apply simple natural principles to your life so that you may enjoy a greater degree of health and wellness. Your world
today. Good afternoon, and welcome back to the Better Living Radio program. My name is Peter Lewis, and I'm pleased to be able to join you once again. Today we have a very special guest with us, Dr. Agatha Thrash. Dr. Thrash, we'd like to welcome you to the Better Living Radio program.
Oh, thank you, Peter. I'm happy to be with you.
All right. Dr. Thrash, of course, is a medical doctor and has an institution of health in Seal, Alabama, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yuchi Pines Institute. Named for the Yuchi Indians who used to inhabit this area.
All right, that's great. So we know that Dr. Thrash travels across North America and do lots of lectures and seminars and at her institution in Seal, Alabama. She teach young people, adults, as well as medical doctor who wants to work with health from a natural point of view. And so today we're going to talk about some of the childhood disease. You know, I have one of the book that Dr. Thrash has written, Natural Healthcare for Your Child. Dr. Thrash, what are some of the common diseases that children are affected by today?
Well, of course, the usual colds and flu that have affected children forever. And also we have probably our very biggest public health problem today in children or for children is overweight.
Overweight.
Of course, that brings with it a number of problems. Of course, a reduced effectiveness of the immune system, which means that their infections can increase easily. It also means they're more subjected to degenerative diseases that affect adults, and we used to think that things like diabetes and gallbladder disease were diseases of those who were over 40, but now we are seeing these diseases beginning under 10 years of age. And of course, precocious puberty is another problem that we have from children being overweight. Children go through their puberty much earlier. Now, that brings with it some serious problems, such as a much higher likelihood of having a school dropout, unwanted pregnancy, juvenile delinquency. All of these are more common in those who have an early puberty.
Okay.
But it's really quite a big problem, Peter, and I'm very concerned about it. We do a lot of health education in schools and for PTAs so that we can help to stem this tide of obesity in childhood.
Okay. Now, let's talk about that a little bit. What would you say is the one of the main factor with childhood obesity? Why are children getting overweight?
Well, one of the important reasons begins in the newborn state. Parents are often really quite concerned if their children do not look plump and rounded instead of just being of normal weight. And therefore, they give them a formula that's much too rich and give them too frequent feeding. The feedings should never be any closer together than 3 hours. And I'm still of the school that believes that 4 hours is probably a better schedule for even newborns that weigh over 8 pounds.
Okay.
Then in early childhood, parents are still quite concerned that their children get enough nutrition and consequently they overnourish them. Desserts, which used to be once or twice a year, treat are now every meal.
Yeah.
Sodas are very unhelpful in several ways, and one is it increases the number of calories that a child takes in one day. And furthermore, it increases the likelihood of such diseases as osteoporosis. And these osteoporosis cases come on quite early, late in life, as once expected that they would.
Okay. So these are some of the reasons why the children are getting overweight, not to mention their diet in school. And is there any consideration for the time that they eat in the evening hours? Or
Peter, children generally do better on a two-meal pattern than on the meal pattern they're usually given. Let me remind you of the fact that it is believed that children need a snack mid-morning and a snack mid-afternoon. Fact is, they really don't need that. A child who is a school age can be trained even to a two-meal plan, and certainly should not be eating more than three times a day. The snack in the middle of the morning, the snack in the middle of the afternoon, and even the snack at bedtime, these should be eliminated for children. These are all habits. And if a child is given a good breakfast and a good lunch, then they're not going to be having a big problem.
That's true.
Making it through from breakfast to lunch.
Okay. So that's definitely a consideration. A parent should try to keep their children on a regular meal schedule as much as possible. That will improve their state of health. How would that affect their IQ?
Well, interestingly enough, breastfeeding has been shown, breastfeeding followed by a regular diet at the age of 1 year to 2 years will be quite effective in improving mental development. Some tests have shown that the likelihood of being 5 IQ points higher is quite great if the child is fed, breastfed at birth, and is transferred to a regular diet at about the age of 6 months to 18 months. Now, a special food can be given to the child until teething has been completed and salivation is advancing quite nicely. Those are two signs that a child's digestive tract is getting mature enough to tolerate solid foods. Now, breastfeeding is so important that although I don't make many house calls, if a young mother threatens to stop breastfeeding or believes that she is stopping producing milk, I will actually make a house call and try to help her to find ways that she can be more up on this matter of breastfeeding.
Now, I was also thinking on another line, one of the childhood concern of ear infections, earaches, and things like that. Does that have anything to do with their diet?
Yes. In fact, there have been several studies which have shown that earaches are associated with the diet. Dr. Frank Oski, who was at one time chairman of the Department of Pediatrics at one of the Ivy League hospitals, I believe it may have been Harvard, wrote a book called Don't Drink Your Milk. And in that book, he says that he had never seen a case of earache or otitis media in a child who had not had an exposure to dairy milk in the previous 5 days. Now, that has been just about our experience here at Uchi Pines as well. We are right now in a pattern of seeing no earaches in children who are fed the usual diet that we give at Uchipine, which is a very simple diet, very low in sugar or honey or syrup or molasses. We suggest that parents not use dairy products for their children, but rather that they use almond milk or soy milk if they tolerate it well, or some other kind of milk than dairy milk. We simply do not see earaches in children who are not fed dairy milk.
That is amazing.
And furthermore, we don't see sore throats often either.
So that is something that's very important for parents to take note of, that from the studies as well as from your experience, you have not seen children with earache that has not had exposure to dairy milk in very recent prior to the condition.
Right. Peter, we do see this, and that is when children go home to visit grandma, and grandma says, "Oh, my poor grandchild has not had dairy milk in a while. I'm going to give my grandchild some milk." And then, interestingly, that greatly increases the likelihood that they're going to get an ear infection or some other kind of upper respiratory tract infection. And a lot of children are sensitive to milk. They're sensitive to the lactose, or they're sensitive to the gluten. Lactose is the principal sugar in milk, and gluten is the principal protein in milk. And it's very important that parents realize that milk is the ideal food only for a little calf and not for a little human.
Okay. Now, if a parent has a child who has the earache and so on, What can a parent do? You know, a parent that's thinking along the natural line or who desire to do something different.
Well, there are many things that can be done. One thing is a gargle, a hot gargle, hot salt water gargle. Very helpful for an earache, also helpful, of course, for a sore throat. But the Eustachian tube opens back on the back of the oropharynx, or back where one sort of loses control over what is being swallowed, and it is swallowed right down, that the Eustachian tubes open right onto that membrane, and gargling will usually get the gargle water or the gargle solution right against the Eustachian tube, which goes up to the middle ear. Now, if the child has an infection in the middle ear, that will assist in the drainage of the middle ear by simply doing a gargle.
Okay.
The thing that's very easy to do is simply put some heat. That can be from a shop lamp, or it can be from a hot compress squeezed out of water, hot water, right on the ear to cover that side of the head and the side of the jaw and the bone that's right behind the ear and neck. So it's not a dainty little a thing that only covers the ear.
Okay.
Will also cover a large portion of the head, that side of the head. That can be enormously comforting to a child who has an earache.
Okay.
Then, of course, putting the feet in hot water. Now, most parents have never heard of treating a headache or an earache or a sore throat or chest congestion with a hot foot bath. But a child can have the feet put in hot water, and that will often decongest the head in a matter of a few minutes. Makes a very good treatment. That in physical therapy departments of hospitals is called a derivative, where an area of congestion is decongested by putting the feet in hot water.
So you're saying put in the feet in hot water. You mean get maybe a bucket, a 5-gallon bucket, or because we're talking about children, maybe a smaller container, and put their feet in the hot water for about 20 minutes?
Right. That would the water needs to come up above the ankles.
Okay.
So a deep pan will be adequate.
Okay.
For a child. Now, for an adult, you'll need something deeper.
Okay. So once they have their feet in the hot water for about 20 minutes, what else? How is that done?
Well, now, usually with a child, I usually simply take the feet out of hot water, dry them, and without letting the feet touch the floor, I put the child in bed and cover up the feet so that they cool down naturally in bed. Now, there are a lot of nurses who treat with natural remedies who will close off the pores with cold water. And they simply do that when they take the feet out of the hot water or cold water, like ice water, over the feet, and then dry them with a frictioning motion with a coarse dry towel, and then put them to bed. But I think I get just about as good results from omitting the cold water as I do with using the cold water.
Okay. So when that is done, approximately how long before the child can see some result, can begin to feel better?
Peter, it is often almost like magic. They begin to feel better almost immediately, like within 5 minutes or less.
And this procedure is beneficial not only for earache, but you mentioned headaches.
Headaches and chest congestion. Now, the hot foot bath also increases the effectiveness of the immune system. And for a child having a problem with a cold or the flu or sore throat or earache will benefit from the boost that comes to the immune system. To give you some idea of how this works, when we increase the temperature, which will happen when you put the feet in hot water, the mouth temperature will rise maybe even a whole degree.
Okay.
And that increases the hungriness of white blood cells and also increases the speed with which they move. That experiment has been done several naturopathic colleges on the West Coast, like National College and John Bastier College of Naturopathic Medicine, where the white blood cells have been shown to be more active, or they move with greater speed, and they have greater interest in eating germs if the temperature rises just a little. And notice, Peter, that brings into question the custom that we have pretty widespread in the states of giving aspirin, which brings the fever down. Is it right to bring the fever down when a person has a slight infection like a cold or the flu? And the answer is no, not unless the temperature gets above 104. Because it is at that level, 104, where the white blood cells begin to get less interested in eating and move less rapidly.
Okay.
So we usually do not try to bring a fever down, let's say, by sponging with warm water or tepid water, and certainly not by aspirin. I never give aspirin to a person with a fever, but I may give a warm bath, which will open up blood vessels on the surface of the body.
Yes.
And then when they stand up and you friction them dry, it opens up blood vessels very readily, and that will bring the mouth temperature down 1 to 3 degrees within a matter of 20 minutes.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Thrash. Tell us a little bit, give us a phone number for your institution, Lifestyle Center, so that if our listeners desire to make contact with you or to get more information on your facility, they can get that information.
Sure. They can call 334-855-4764. Again, that's 334 855-4764.
Once again, listeners, we've been speaking with Dr. Agatha Thrash, medical doctor, and she, as well as her staff, has an institution in Seal, Alabama, called Uchi Pines. If you desire to contact her or to get further information on what is offered there, you can call this number, 334-855-4764. Dr. Thrash, we'd like to get you back on the program, and because there's much that we'd like to share with our listening audience.
Good. I'll be happy to do that.
All right. Thank you, dear listeners. Remember, children are very precious to the Lord. He says, suffer the little children to come unto me. So we want to be able to care for our little children. Thank you, and may God bless you, dear listener. Join us again same time next week.
You've been listening to Better Living, sponsored by the Camden Seventh-day Adventist Church. This program is for educational purposes only and is not intended for diagnosis, treatment, or cure of any disease. For questions or comments, you're invited to call Better Living at 584-2670. Better Living is heard each Wednesday and Thursday at this time on 1220 WFWL.